Welcome to the Outer Realm with Michelle DeRoche and Amelia Pisano. Airing live on the United Public Radio Network, 105.3 FM in New Orleans.
Good evening, everyone. Welcome to the Wednesday night segment of The Outer Realm. We are broadcasting live on the United Public Radio Network, UFO Paranormal Radio Network, 105.3 FM from the Gulf Coast and 107.7 FM from beautiful New Orleans. We're fully sponsored by the amazing people over right here, Folgers Coffee. They've been a part of our journey for the last few years. Thank you, Folgers. We couldn't do it without you. We appreciate you so very much. Also, big thank you to Justin Snicker, a.k.a. Dr. Snick, the Sonic Surgeon, for the contribution of his time, his music, and his voice for the intro you just heard. He is an award-winning composer of Halloween, horror, sci-fi, and dark wave electronic music, which can be found in all of your favorite music streaming platforms. Also, big thanks to Steve McGinnis, the artist behind the banners and logos here at the show. Check him out on Facebook and Instagram. Also, specializes in the horror genre and does phenomenal commission pieces of any sort. So you'll notice Amelia's not here tonight. It is her birthday. So everybody send her out love, light, lots of birthday wishes. She is with family and, you know, hopefully she's doing something really, really fun. See, people are chiming in. Thank you. Thank you. Guys, look at that. Wayne's here early for once. Hold on, why are we just, sorry, somebody's jammed, soundboard's acting up, so apologies on that. Wayne looks like he might be sitting there for a little bit. Anyway, okay, let's see, there we go, all right. Don't ask me, I have no clue, I'm not overly technology savvy when it comes to this thing. So, hey, Michael, how are you? Yes, I remember, thank you so much for following and your support. Hello, hello Heidi, hello Janie. Oh, my God. Hi, Kathy. Look at you guys. It looks like you're all just as excited as I am for this. Hello, Michelle. So tonight, I've been looking forward to this. It's going to be a whole lot of interesting conversation. We're welcoming John Thomas. He's going to be talking about his book that was written, of course, with colleagues. And it was incredible. Incredible content. You guys, I think, are really going to dig this. Channeled Messages of Hope, Conversations with History's Most Prominent Souls on the Other Side. You know, we've heard us talk a little bit about this. I think, you know, in the field of the paranormal, and this is a lot different, you'll often have mediums who will try to communicate with prominent historical figures based on locations they may be at, trying to get information, you know, to correlate with some of the information that they're coming across through investigations and so on. And even in the field of ufology, people are doing it with extraterrestrials. It's a little bit different techniques, I'm sure. But this is going to be exciting because how many people, especially for what we've come through, hi, Sherry. You know, the world is in a different place right now. And maybe we need to have updated information with this technique because it seems that their spirits, especially those who have been hard at work in conserving the planet and energy and political stuff, you know, they're still very, very involved and still have things to say. So without further ado, John Thomas, how are you?
Michelle, pleasure to be here. Thank you.
Oh, pleasure to have you. Been really, really looking forward to this because, it's, of course, it's right up my alley and a lot of questions. And it's an unusual project that you guys took on. Where would you like to start with us with all of this conception? So
first of all, maybe the right place to start might be the the nature of how the communications took place, and I could go into where the inspiration was for the overall project. But
yes,
first of all, I'm John Thomas. Pleasure to be here. My wife, Carolyn Thomas, was really the inspiration for the book, and Sam Larkin, the channeler. The channeling on this is unique. Now, look, I'm not a channeler myself. I'm a tech guy from Silicon Valley. So I got kind of drafted to the project that I love by my wife, because there's some technical people we talked to in the course of her writing the book. But the nature of the channeling is that Sam is what we would call a voice channeler, and I've learned this over time. So a typical channeling session might look like you talk to a channeler who can connect to the other side. You pose your questions through them. They ask, they get responses, they tell you. Mm-hmm. The difference on this one is that Sam was able to actually bring in the souls, or the soul life, I might say, that we were talking to. And when she brought that soul in, it essentially took over her voice, her persona. Sam would not remember anything about these channeling sessions. But because Sam was in the middle of this, if we were talking to, let's say, John McCain or Nikola Tesla or whatever, we could actually have dialogue through Sam. Sam was like the internet to the other side. Let me just make it sort of
right. Well put.
But we would actually have conversation. And these souls had senses of humor. There was a lot of back and forth. There was not pass the information, get an answer, move the. It was an actual conversation. So we have come to call that voice channeling, and it's fairly unique. And actually, Channel Messages of Hope, our book, if you look on the website, you can actually hear some of these audio sessions, because we would actually do them via Zoom to Sam, who lived an hour away. We'd record the sessions. And we actually have an audiobook that's out now on Odyssey and things like that that actually has – it's, to me, it's fascinating hearing the voices of the souls. Mm-hmm. Like, for instance, Sam, you know, Sam's a West Coast person. I live on the West Coast. I'm in Silicon Valley.
Yeah.
Maybe the people on the East Coast would say I have an accent. I'm not sure. but like, for example, when we were talking to John Muir, all of a sudden, when it came through the channeler, he had this Scottish accent and this and that, or Tesla had this kind of Eastern European feeling to the voice. It's really, the audio to me is really, it's unique and very interesting. But that's the nature of how we did the communication.
Beautiful.
I could go through how the origin came up, but you let me know where you want to.
John, this is your show. I'm tagging along, and I'll keep up, and I want you to get as much information out as possible.
All right.
The website is scrolling along the bottom for everybody, so you can tag onto it at any point.
Thank you. Thank you very much. So,
pleasure.
Here's what happened. So my wife, Carolyn, and she knew Sam. They were personal friends. The way they sort of formed the friendship is Sam had this kind of – she saw that she had this psychic ability with animals mostly. And so she does not do this professionally. It's not like she doesn't book hours of time or anything like that. But because she knew my wife, and we were having some trouble with some cats in the house, not getting along, things like that. So Sam helped us with that. And they forged a friendship, as I did with Sam as well. Mm-hmm. And over time, Sam told Carolyn, I'm getting these high vibration messages. I don't know who they're from, but they're for you. I don't understand it. So Carolyn engaged Sam, and they had a session. And what came through in that session, when Sam connected to wherever she felt the messages were coming from, they were coming from an entity on the other side. We'll just call this entity Baba, but we've come to realize there's a group on the other side called the Council, highly ascended masters, probably not coming back in a body.
Mm-hmm.
But this particular entity had messages for Carolyn. And so they started this dialogue going through Sam.
Yeah.
And once that Carolyn was like, oh my God, Sam can connect not just with animals, but with souls that were in a body. And Carolyn had this inspiration at one point. It's like, wow, if we can do that, maybe, and we, you know, we're distressed about the country we're in, the divided nature. I won't go through all the stuff. This is not a political show, even though we talk to. The book has interviews with, people might say, politicians. We say, no, policymakers. Okay. So, but anyway, so Carolyn, you know, had this dialogue, and then Carolyn had this inspiration. Wow, if I could talk to all these different souls, if we connect this way, maybe I could bring in messages of hope for all the things that are going on. People are distressed about this and that. So, she had this conversation. So she posed that and asked Sam to connect to this entity on the other side, the infamous Baba. Baba. Let me just say famous.
Yeah.
And what Baba told her is, Carolyn, this is not, that's a great inspiration, but this is our idea on the council, this high group of ascended masters that knows that our earth is in trouble right now and our earth is distressed. And by the way, everything has a soul, earth, et cetera, et cetera. So they said, this is our project. We've chosen you to carry it out, and we want you to carry this forward. And that was the genesis, really, of the book.
Wow. So how did Carolyn feel about, you know, first off, you're getting this message from an ascended master's kind of, well, shucks, Jesus, thank you. But that's a big responsibility. How did she take to that?
Well, at first she was very intimidated with the whole thing. But she had such a soul connection to this particular entity, Baba, who was supporting her in the effort, and she knew that this was a part of a contract of her current, you know, her lifetime, this lifetime in a body. It was, she was chosen to do this. And in fact, this entity said that, you know, he noticed, because Carolyn had some health problems and some things back in like the 2008, 2010 timeframe, which I'm her husband. I didn't realize how dire it was. She was considering, maybe I just don't want to be here on this earth anymore. And so this entity had come through at that time in various ways to get her through that period, because it was felt that, you know, her mission was to kind of get this communication out. So yes, she was intimidated, but she had such a nice relationship through Sam with Baba. And actually they did other things too, not in the book. They talked to David Bowie and other people that they really liked.
That'd be fun.
Oh my God.
Carolyn, some fun in there.
I'd hear her in her office in our home here near Silicon Valley, and they would just be laughing and having the greatest time, you know. They love that. And so you know, that's what I was like, oh, what's going on here?
Party? Why am I not invited? Who invited David Bowie and not me? So that's
kind
very
of like
cool.
That. Kind of like that. But but that's where it started. And then the whole idea came out, and it was like, all right, why are we starting with the earth? It's because Baba said the earth is in distress right now. We need to get messages out. Many people are in despair of where our environment is going. They don't know where it's going. And, you know, we need to get some messages of hope out for these people that need that. And that's where it started.
Wow. I agree. I mean, so when did the project at hand begin, and when did it end?
So let's see, this is 2025. The interviews and everything kind of wound up at the end of 2023. We took 2024 to get the book all pulled together and get a lot of people working on it. And we're sitting here now in early 2025. So kind of the early part of last year is when the soul interviews. I mean, a lot has happened in our country and our world since then. If anything, it's like, wow, we probably need this.
Yes, that's where I was going with it. Yeah, you know, just because it just goes to show the perspective of all of these individuals that you communicated with, and how very present they still are in every aspect of our evolutionary journey and that of the, you know, the planet, and how we as a people are all interacting.
Well, you know, so it's like, okay, who needs a book like this, especially with what's going on now? And again, this is not a political book. We're not political people, but you know, if you're
touch on it a little bit, it's fine.
No, it's all right. So, but if you're spiritually open, Mm-hmm. We're spiritually curious. You know, we're not here to convince people that the channeling's authentic or the naysayers. Mm-hmm. But if you're spiritually open, spiritually curious, and you care where our earth is going, mm-hmm. and you care about it for your children. Actually, Michelle, the perspective I came to after talking to these souls, because there's a lot more than the environment in here. It's about what are you doing on the other side? What mm-hmm. was your transition like? How do you influence people back in a body? Things like that. I started thinking about it like, I know that I'm not done with these lifetimes in the body. I have some more lessons to learn. And it's like, what kind of world do I want to come back to when I transition and then come back is a bit of a different perspective than what do I want to leave for my children, which is mm-hmm. very valid, but mm-hmm. it really made me think in a different way.
Like, well, especially when you're thinking, you know, if the theory is correct and we tend to come back on an average once, say, our children are kind of up there and the whole soul circle's back together and the decision's made, then you're probably going to be waiting a while. You definitely want to make sure you're leaving it a better place, you know, to come back to.
I would say that if everyone kind of had that perspective, I think things would be different here.
Yeah.
But, you know, when we were talking to souls, especially about the lifetimes and when they come back and how often do they come back and how does the whole thing work, which is completely different than the environment. I mean, we got some really interesting information. I mean, here's an example. Mm-hmm. Maleva Einstein, wife of Albert Einstein, mm-hmm. on the planet, okay? She was very much technically a part of what Albert Einstein was doing back with theory of relativity, all this stuff. But because at that time, women were not really given that kind of respect, she was in the background. Mm-hmm. But her son had schizophrenia, Edward. And mm-hmm. so it really put her in a bad place in her lifetime, trying to figure out how do I raise Edward? Then they divorced and all that kind of stuff. Well, she transitioned, but she's actually back in a body. Well, we were talking to that lifetime of her.
Wow.
She was telling us that she had actually come back in a body. She was a psychotherapist in, I believe, in India, that was working with mentally challenged people. That was her contract. Her mission was to help people in that way. And believe me, there's more stories like that in this book.
I love that. My question would be, does the current soul, like the current vessel, is she aware of who she was? Because that would just be a book right there.
Oh, my God. I mean, that's the kind of stuff I was thinking, too. Here's another example. Let's take John Muir.
Okay.
John Muir, who was really kind of a preservationist, and he forged a great relationship with Theodore Roosevelt. Theodore Roosevelt, really responsible for our national park system,
yes,
based on his influence with John Muir. John Muir is one of the guys with the Scottish accent. You can hear it on the website or the audiobook, which is out. Mm-hmm. You can hear it come through. But we didn't really know at the beginning of these interviews what questions to ask. Mm-hmm. We start, and what's out of bounds? What's in bounds? And pretty soon we start figuring out we can ask anything. They won't always tell us. But John mm-hmm. Muir said, yes, I am back in a body right now. I'm actually kind of a young teenager. I'm living in Alberta, Canada, near a lake. I think it was called, I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing it like, but Pale Lake or something like that. I'm like, what? Why? How could you be so specific? So we look, and he described how it looks. So, of course, what do? We go on the internet. Mm-hmm. There's the lake. Looks exactly like he described it. Mm-hmm. There's this preteen, you know, this guy that loves snowboarding. That's John Muir in his body right now. Does the snowboarder, young teenager, know about John Muir? I don't think so.
See, that's insane. It really lends to the theory that the soul splits, and they can exist simultaneously if they're so, you know, communicating with you coherently, and everything is just real time and just intelligently.
Well, here's what I have gathered after all the interviews, which I was part of, and all the questioning, is that this is my view. Okay.
Other
people have a different view, but
there is
source, the ultimate source. And all of us have a slice of that source in us. And then we have our higher self, which is kind of our soul. Mm-hmm. So even though our physical body may give out when mm-hmm. we transition, our soul is fully intact.
Mm-hmm.
Then we go to the other side. There's probably some life review. We're here to learn lessons. We're
correct.
I'm trying to learn as many lessons as I can so I don't have to relearn them.
I'm with you on that, John. Yes.
But you go over, you have this thing, you have this piece of source in you. Your higher self contains all your lifetimes. So this was the thing that was just most blew me away. It's like, so I can talk to you with your higher self, but talking to you in one of your lifetimes while you may be on Earth in a body, that body doesn't really know much about you, but it carries something in your life lesson back. Just like, you know, Maleva and the psychotherapist that's in India, or Theodore Roosevelt. Theodore Roosevelt is a Tibetan monk.
Oh, what now?
Point. Yes.
That's crazy.
But you know what? It's not so crazy, because if you look at I have great admiration for Theodore Roosevelt. If you read up on him, the things he did, police commission.
Oh, he was an adventurer.
Oh, my God, this guy was amazing. But here's the thing. In his lifetime, he was probably not as sensitive to animal life as he would like once he got to the other side and do a review. I'm not going to make commentary about hunters or anything like that, but, you know, he got to the other side and was like, wow, St. Francis taught us we are all one. We are all connected. But Theodore is coming back into a role that has great reverence for animal life. It's like maybe that was his new lesson coming back down to learn. And he talked openly about that in our, you know, our channeling session. It's fascinating to me.
See, people look at him, you know, you look at this high-stress job like politics, and now he's a Tibetan monk. So it's kind of like we're flip sides, zenning out, watching everything from afar, taking it in.
This is the thing that I take from all this is like, look, I know one thing I've become very sensitized to through this process is what are my own personal life lessons. I've realized a few of them. And it's like you get the lesson. Maybe you're a little bit, you know, not sensitive to your lesson. And so it will keep until it is really smacking you in the face, you know. So
you're not listening.
So I learned a few of those and I'm like, oh, that's why that keeps happening. You know, like people might say like, oh, I get in these bad relationships and they always work out the same way, you know. There's lessons to be learned. My own personal thing, I'd like to learn as many as I can, because when I come back, you know, I'd rather like have a nice time and not have to learn all these lessons, but there'll be new ones.
Yes.
You know, and I'd like the earth in a better place when I come back, which I know I will. I don't know if Carolyn will need to. I think she's more evolved than I am. I'll just say that.
Yeah. Well, I get that. You know, I think it's why she was chosen.
I think so too.
I do think we need to be at a certain level of our evolutionary journey to be able to have that kind of responsibility bestowed onto us. And okay, now we're going to put the fate of the planet on your shoulders. No pressure. Get it right.
Well, you know what? There actually is no pressure in this, because what the council wanted through Baba is simply for those people that need these kinds of messages. Our whole goal with this book, we're not here to make a bunch of money or anything like that. We're here to get the messages in the hands of those that could use it. So if you're spiritually open, spiritually curious, care about the environment, this book will give you some things to give you some hope, because there is a lot of work going on. We know, and we talk to, you know, technologists, conservationists, policy makers, spiritual leaders. It's a kind of an eclectic mix, you might say, and it didn't start, that list that we ended in the table of contents is not what we started with.
Wow.
But it evolved to that.
Yes. Well, I mean, I think you hit pretty much every angle, you know, of what's happening right now, right down to technology, spiritualism, political views, and so on. And what I found really interesting, though, is hearing what it was like to, you know, to cross over that, you know, the fears and everything else.
Yeah, that is a big high point of interest, you know, I mean, for everyone, myself included. And you know, we got some very interesting things like Rachel Carson. She wrote a book called Silent Spring, kind of bringing a lot of visibility to pesticides. It was not a popular book, especially with the big conglomerates that were running things at the time, but she stuck to her guns. She died of cancer. It was not good at the end for her. She said that when she crossed over, she was greeted with this, a quote, a million monarch butterflies.
Wow.
Probably an appreciation, you know, for her and what she did really for the planet. And then we got other stuff like GW 41, President 41, you know, he lost a child very early in life when he crossed over. There were his pets. There were the children. Samuel Clemens, a.k.a. Mark Twain.
Yes.
Why did we talk to Samuel Clemens? Because Nikola Tesla, who's obviously a noted technologist, we talked to him. We always ended these interviews with the souls, who else should we talk to? And he said, well, you got to talk to Samuel Clemens. And I was like, Samuel Clemens?
Yeah. Why?
What's up with that? Well, it turns out that Samuel Clemens in his day, writing, you know, the Mark Twain books, he was a very active investor. He loved technology. He developed a real relationship with Tesla. And for whatever reason, Samuel Clemens, he greets people that come over that have died probably in a very catastrophic way from gun violence and things like that. That's what he does. That's his way. And he told us, because we said, well, are you back in Earth? And another body said, no. And his quote was, I've graduated.
I graduated. I get to stay up here and forget soul school.
apparently, like when, you know, if somebody dies in a, you know, in a violent way, he's there to greet them on the other side. Just there was just so many things like that that just made me go, wow. You know?
Yes.
I had no idea.
I found it interesting when McCain had spoken about fear and attachment. You know, it's so difficult. You know, it can be fearful and letting go of attachments and things like that. And I thought, that's very interesting, you know, because I guess it goes to show it's just not something – most people who are very, I find real hardcore business people to be the same way. You don't lean to that side as much. Political people, for sure, because you're, it's always like right in the now, what's in front of you, the matter at hand. You don't think that far ahead.
Well, you know, one thing that, you know, when we got John McCain and we, Carolyn asked him a lot about his experience as a POW. I will say for me personally, I have a lot of admiration for John McCain. I'm not saying Democrat, Republican, anything.
We're talking people.
Yeah, we're talking people.
That's right.
I personally am more of a kind of a moderate, a little left, a little right here and there. But John McCain was a leader. And he said that when he went through his POW experience, which was getting near 6 years, at first, he didn't really, in our soul conversation, he was not really thrilled to talk about that because it was a very difficult time in my life. It was just very cold. It was just horrible. But it's like, why did he go through that experience? And what he told us is just another one of my kind of conclusions, you know, we're put on this earth in this body to learn certain things. We're here to have our experiences and hopefully learn from them. John McCain, his soul wanted to have that experience. His soul said, I think the quote was, we're going for it. You're going for something that's not going to be a comfortable thing. But
I hope it's an evolutionary thing. I hope it bumped him up a few notches.
I would hope so. He did that. Then he came back and he stayed in public service. But if you notice John McCain, he could never really raise his hands very high because he had so many injuries from that time. But, you know, the bottom line, Michelle, is like we're here for experiences to learn some lessons. Hopefully we carry them forward. And, you know, I'm sure there's more, but that's how
it goes. Man, I just don't want to come back and repeat it.
Seriously.
We keep thinking, we got this, and then we even realize we're so far from it. In some cases, like, gosh. But
I feel the same way. It's like I'm looking at this thing at my in my stage of life, and I'm like, okay, there's a few lessons I've had to learn in the last few years that just had to really hit me hard. And then mm-hmm. I went, oh my God, that's it. You know, it's like mm-hmm. I let certain things slide, or I wasn't as detailed on certain things. Maybe I'm a CEO of a startup here in Silicon Valley.
Yeah.
It has an environmental aspect to it. But in the midst of putting this business together, I made mistakes, you know, and some of those mistakes were part of my life lesson. And boy, it was painful and expensive when the universe finally said, what do we have to do, John, to get your attention? Okay, here we go.
And that's pretty much it. It's got to hurt. That's the only way you remember it.
I think you're right. I completely see it. I'm very sensitized to let me learn as much as I can, do the best job I can. I'll still make mistakes. There's still more things. But,
That's how it goes. That's what it's about, too. If it was all that easy, you know, we wouldn't be here in the first place.
I think so.
You know, Wayne actually, to add to that, says, you say we're put here on Earth in these bodies. Is that a choice of our own, or do you feel like we're quite literally forced back here? Good question. Against your will. Thrown down there.
Well, okay, who's to say, right? I guess we'll all find out later.
Yeah.
I don't think, from what I've seen, that we have a real, like, I don't think that when I go to the other side, I'll just be able to say, oh, yeah, I kind of like it here. I think I'm going to stay. I'm going to stick around forever. I think that there are lessons my soul needs to evolve.
Yeah.
And I think that I will, from what we could tell, talking to all these souls, there is, I don't want to say it's a negotiation, but it's a conversation. It's a life review. And I think when you get to the other side and you have more clarity, you can say, I probably need to learn that one. And I probably need to go back and do it. This is my own kind of conclusions after all this stuff. So I don't think we're forced back. I think it is a clarity of what we have to do, and we need to go back because our soul needs to evolve. This is my thinking. I guess we'll all find out later, Michelle. So
yeah, I how many times I end up in the guest seat, and what's your thoughts on this? I'll let you know when I get there, because there is no real answer for that. And I agree. I agree. It's all about, you know, the evolution of our essence and, you know, what we get to do, what we get to come back as, you know. So do you come back as having a hard life, or do you come back maybe where you can be the monk, Tibetan monk, sitting off in the mountain, enjoying the view, meditating all day? I'd be down for that. Connecting with nature. And
I know, it sounds great, you know.
I know. It's like, we're just doing it wrong.
I think just my conclusion is the more we can evolve while we're here, the more clarity and acknowledgement and awareness of our situation means that our next life should even be better. We should be able, it's not just coming down here like we're punishing you. You have to learn these lessons. I think it's an evolution. So you can do other things. I mean, look at Nikola Tesla. Here's a really good example.
Okay.
So when he was here as an incredible inventor, you know, 12, 18 hours a day, huge logs, all these inventions. But guess what he missed out on? He missed out on having love in his life, let's say a companion, something like that. There's some famous stories about Tesla that we didn't understand. The pigeon story, where he would have these pigeons come to his laboratory window, and he had great relationships with these pigeons. Well, guess what? They're prescient beings in their own sense, okay? But he did not have much family. He didn't have, you know, a soulmate, a companion, a wife, or whatever. He just work. And what he told us is that in his next lifetime, he wants to experience love and companionship. He wants that experience that he did not have in his lifetime when he was here in a body. He had great technology experience. I mean, the technologies and things that he worked on are things that are actually going to help bail us out of this environmental thing later. But he didn't have the human experience in that way. So.
Which is sad. I mean, my God, a man is just brilliant. And it's interesting when I'm when I'm reading, and he's sitting there saying, "Where are we lost with this? I set everything up. It's all there. Where's the problem? Why are we not doing this right now? Why are we struggling?"
Well, why are we struggling?
Well, we know, but I mean, he's kind of, what's going on? You know?
Yeah. Well, you know, both Tesla and Einstein were great inventors, you know, and Tesla left immense documentation of his technology inventions, including like how to transmit energy. We say in Silicon Valley, OTA, over the air. How can I transmit mm-hmm. energy, which also has kind of, nefarious possibilities. You know, mm-hmm. I could transfer energy and blow that ship out of the water, something like that. So when he died, he was living at the Waldorf Astoria in New York, and the government came in and cleared out all these trunks with all his, you know, documents.
Well, that would be Donald Trump's uncle. It is. He was some sort of an astrophysicist, physicist. They sent him in through via FBI, and he got them.
Well, you know what? And that may make sense. And so we asked Tesla. So what's your conclusion about that? Well, Tesla's, and it's in the book, is that some of these inventions in the wrong hands could lead to very bad conclusions. He wasn't necessarily adverse to governments coming in and taking, you know, Bosnia and the USA coming in and taking those things and taking them kind of off, you know, the public domain. Mm-hmm. He was not actually against that. So, because, you know, where would it go? Now, whoever was the person that went in, whoever they're related to, yeah, that makes sense. I've heard that one too.
Yeah, it's interesting, you know. Yeah. But it's funny when he makes comments like blowing a ship out of the water. He did have a hand in the Philadelphia experiment, getting all those generators in there, getting that technology. It's kind of like the man was brilliant. It was one of the last things that he actually did. You know, so he did work with, he was a team player. He just never got credit for anything.
No, he definitely was. And actually, I have that picture is on my desk. And I kind of got drafted into this project when Carolyn started putting it together and realizing that to put this whole perspective, I'm going to have to talk to some very technical people.
Yes.
I mean, look, we had Gandhi and we have St. Francis, we have spiritual leaders, but we also have, you know, the Einsteins and Nikola Tesla and people like that. So she asked me to come in. I have a technology background, and I was very interested in what she was doing. But she said, hey, maybe you can help on some of these more technical interviews. That's how I got into it at the very early stage, and very fascinating.
Seriously. Yes. Well, he would feel a kinship to you because you would understand, you know, his lingo, what he was trying to say. But, you know, it's very interesting to me because, you know, he did understand why some things needed to be kept out of certain hands and why some things did need to be hidden. I found that very interesting when I read that. And, you know, he's like, oh, I'm fully aware of it. But, you know, when you're looking at the fact that he also spoke about the Earth's layer of energetic fields, which can be, you know, again, condensed and transformed into energy, because it is all vibration and frequencies, and it takes you back to the old days. Have you ever heard of Tartaria, the whole Tartarian theory, which is free energy? Well, it's free energy. You know, back in the day, you'd see some of the world fairs. You have these blimps coming up to these tall buildings. You know, like the Empire State Building, for example, they're coming in and there's these huge rods, and a lot of the old churches had them, and the blimps would just recharge like right up there from the ether. And we're just like, wait a minute, we want in on that? What happened? Where did it go? That was a Tesla thing.
Well,
beyond, he knew how to tap it.
He did. He was very brilliant. But, you know, to me, his intentions were very pure also. He was trying to improve things. He wasn't trying to find some sort of advantage that we could, you know, put on some other group and we could somehow win.
Yeah.
It was not a win-lose game in his point of view.
Yes.
And that's the other thing about, you know, that you really see is it's not a zero-sum game. Everybody can win. In this whole thing. Mm-hmm. And there was a lot of discussions we have with the souls about how are you guiding others? How are you interacting with those in a body and things like that? And here's one thing that we learned on the zero sum thing is that you can have guides. You can ask any soul to be your guide if you explicitly ask them. It doesn't matter how famous they were or whatever. It could be your grandmother.
Mm-hmm.
You will have natural guides, and then you can have those that you actually ask. This became very apparent to us. So you know, I'm very fortunate. You know, St. Francis is a guide for me. I know Theodore Roosevelt. Was I fully aware of this before? No, but then I asked them, you know, please be my guide. You guys have great wisdom here. And what they told us is that there is no, like, it's, I can only have 5,000 people, and that's my guiding is done.
You know, they have limits. Wow.
They don't have that.
They
don't have limits in that way. If you are willing to energetically reach out and connect, try to connect in the best way you can through your meditations or whatever, these souls on the other side want to help. They want to help. I just think that it's a great lost opportunity for many people knowing that this level of guides are available for us. And they are very active with people on the other side. It's very subtle. It can be aha moments. I come to you in a dream. It's not like I'm going to, you know, drop the patent on your desk and here's the invention that you need to do. It doesn't work like that. I mean, they're there to guide, you know, not lead. They're there to influence in their way, to the extent that people are open to that.
Yeah, I would think if they tried to influence the other way, it would put them back in soul school right down here. Not in a good way, yeah.
I didn't actually consider that part, but I think you're right. I don't think that would... One thing we also got is, you know, it's the fundamental energy is love. It all comes from love. And so people talk about heaven and hell and things like that. My conclusion is that hell is of your making. This is me talking. Your mind, the terrible things you're going through. But on the other side, all of them we talked to about how their transition went, how it goes on. It's all about love on the other side. And I will say, this is going back over a year ago, but I had this dream where I was on the other side, and I just have to say, Michelle, it was like the most fabulous, fantastic acceptance, calm feeling I've had. You don't get that on earth very often. And I had a glimpse of maybe what it's like on the other side when you go into that level of love and acceptance. And so I do think that, I don't think that there would be nefarious intent coming from the other side.
No,
we'll find out. Yeah, I don't think that would work well.
I've communicated with many, many spirits, some famous ones, some, you know, what I call regular, just, you know, everyday people who have had their insight into coming in and telling us what things are like. You know, I've had the experience of dealing with people with time slips and all kinds of things. And one thing that remains evident in everything is the fact that they are so willing to share, and that they, in some cases, depending what it is they're trying to share, because I don't go looking for specific things, you know, through mediumship and things like that. You don't go looking for specific things. You sometimes just will have somebody who's saying, hey, you know, it's important. This is my message, and I need this to get out. But I've even spoken with family members, for example. I've had a family member who was just over the top, and when he would try to communicate things, when they get out of hand, they have people they have to answer to who are saying, that's enough. And I would hear this voice saying, that's enough. That's enough. You know, then, of course, I got my family member trying to throw in a few extra words. I'm like, God, Grandpa, you're going to come right back into soul school if you don't stop. And the validation for me was my grandmother would say he would come and visit with her, and he had this guide, this woman in the background, just limiting what it is it could say.
Oh.
So it's a curiosity. Maybe, you know, my grandfather just didn't get the memo. Maybe it's not for everybody. I don't know. But the willingness for them to want to share the information, to tell us, like, this is what it's like. This is great. You don't have to fear it. But, you know, right now there are things, you know, in your own life or in your case with yourself and your team, it was on a grander scale.
Yeah. Well, you know, that's really interesting about your grandfather, because it's like, okay, where is he at in his soul evolution? I mean, we don't know, or I don't know exactly how it works, but, you know, Mileva Einstein, back to Mileva, said, yeah, I'm in my 122nd, you know, life in a body. There seemed to be this, is it thousands or 100? I don't know. It's probably how fast do you learn a lesson, and how fast can you progress, and where is it taking you? I mean, St. Francis. I mean, St. Francis, my God, you know, the guy was hundreds and hundreds of years ago. It's very pervasive, prevalent. His messages are strong. And here's what I noticed also in these soul interviews. And, you know, I deal in Silicon Valley and all this stuff. But there was no ego coming out of these souls. No ego whatsoever. Just, we're here. We love you. We want to help you. That you're reaching out. And it's just so refreshing. I mean, my God, you know, it's like, wow. It really struck me. It did.
So who was the one individual that you guys communicated with that you so didn't see it coming, did not expect it from that person?
I mean, if you look at like the table of contents, you got, you know, you've got you know, Wayne Dyer, Rachel Carson, you've got Charles Keeling, who figured out the whole global warming thing. But here's the one that you may find interesting. Richard Nixon. Why Richard Nixon? Most people ask about that.
That was my thought. Why?
And the reason, because Carolyn is a researcher. Before any of these interviews, there was usually like a one-month run-up. She's reading books. She's constructing the framework. She's putting it all together. And when we would go to have the actual soul conversation, Sam the channeler would never know who we're talking. We'd tell Sam the day before. We want to talk to this one. Here's a picture. She'd had none of the research and everything. But in Carolyn's research, Richard Nixon, who obviously, you know, the travails, the Watergate, all this rotten, bad stuff. In the State of the Union of 1970, Richard Nixon was way ahead of the game in terms of environmental. He saw what was going on with water. I mean, if anyone could read his State of the Union from 1970, they would go, wow. He was almost like, we have to pay reparations to Earth for what we've done to Earth. Carolyn wanted to talk to him, but she was also terrified. She was terrified because it's like we were told by other souls, and we said we would like to talk to Nixon, and the soul, other soul's guidance was, well, he's in deep review. Right now, he is not accessible. We don't know if he'll come through. So, at the time that the interview with Nixon was kind of after an interview with another soul. We put two in one session, which was not the normal. And Carolyn was seriously terrified and intimidated. And so, when Sam went to invoke to ask, you know, Nixon and that persona to come in, it didn't happen instantly. There was a little bit of a delay. And when he came in, you know what he said? Right off the top, he said, are you sure you want to be talking to me?
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. That's in the book.
Did not see that coming, huh?
No, we didn't see that coming. And it was like, you know, my thought is this. It's like, look, and what he told us is that the lesson, his life review, the lesson he's learning is he had such arrogance, you know, win at all costs, you know, you other people lose, all this kind of thing. But he had this other side of him. He set up, he created the EPA. I know it's getting ripped down right now, but he created it, and we need that, in my humble opinion. But when he came in, it's like, why do you want to talk to me? Because his reputation among those in a body is not very good. And when Carolyn explained it, he kind of started to warm up. My only thinking with that is, it's like, I hope that he got in his life review some, I don't know, a little bit of comfort that, you know, some people see what he did on the other other things he was working on, because so many other things were not good. I'm not trying to discount those. It's not a weighing game. We don't make up for one with the other. But that one was really, really something. Carolyn was, she was almost trembling at the time when he came in. But, yeah, it worked out.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. You know, you have people from all walks of life, all different, you know, all different jobs, all different, you know, all different points of view. And I think, you know, we have those who even here made it their mission to try to really bring people together. And I mean, Wayne Dyer is one. That would have been very profound. Did you want to talk about what Wayne Dyer had to say?
Well,
everybody loves Wayne Dyer.
Wayne Dyer is an amazing guy, spiritual leader.
Yes.
devoted his life to, you know, it was not an easy upbringing for Wayne.
Okay.
You know, he grew up in kind of a broken household. His father deserted them. Mm-hmm. And somehow he figured it out and pieced it together and realized he had this this gift, okay, mm-hmm. the gift of communication and being able to bring everyone together. He is a teacher. Mm-hmm. Even now, he would say, I am a teacher. This is what he told us when he was on the other side.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's kind of the perspective you get in this book when you're talking about, you know, policymakers and preservationists, conservationists, all the way over to the spiritual leaders. Mm-hmm. What struck me is the perspective mm-hmm. that you get about the environment. You can talk to a technologist and they'll talk to you about nuclear fusion and clean energy and Albert mm-hmm. Einstein telling us where that is going. Then you go over to like Wayne Dyer and St. Francis and they're saying, look, the earth is angry. The earth mm-hmm. is feeling not respected and the earth is reacting mm-hmm. in a way when you don't feel respect. Like if you treated a family member the way that humanity has treated our environment, you cannot expect that you're going to get good treatment in return. Mm-hmm. This resonated with me. So, mm-hmm. you know, Wayne Dyer really made that point about the earth being angry. St. Francis made the point about the fact we're all connected. Mm-hmm. It's not man up here and everything else below. Mm-hmm. Man, the animals, you know, plant, mm-hmm. the ocean. Jacques Cousteau would talk mm-hmm. a lot about the soul of the ocean and what's going on there. And this all has to work together.
Mm-hmm.
The better perspective, in my opinion, say, look, we've been given this gift of this environment that allows us to live.
Mm-hmm.
And we're kind of doing a lot of things that can really take that environment out of balance.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's kind of like, you know, I have my canned thing about climate deniers. You know, we don't have to go into that, but it's like when the earth is out of balance, when your life is out of balance, think of it this way. Let's say you have one of those weekends, you went out a lot, you stayed out late, maybe you didn't eat as well as you should, and then you hit Monday and you're like, oh my God, you know, it's like, mm-hmm. I got to take a couple days, I got to do some work, I got to get myself back into balance. Mm-hmm. I see it the same way for the earth. When we've mm-hmm. taken the earth out of balance, the mm-hmm. earth would like to come back into balance, but mm-hmm. man keeps pushing, taking things out of balance. And, you know, even on our society today, as we sit here in March 2025, and I look with just distress at some of the policies that are, you know, continuing the out of balance behavior. It's somewhat mm-hmm. distressing, but
mm-hmm.
we find mm-hmm. out in the book and channel messages of hope that many, many people, especially the younger generations, mm-hmm. understand this and are working on solutions. And there are some pretty good things that are going to be coming about. But I guess that was my little speech on that.
Yeah. No, I am with you on that because I am just one of those people that loves earthing and one of those people that loves forests and the animals. And I don't like seeing anything out of place. I believe it sustains us. I believe the planet is very sentient, has you know, her own energy. And if we're going to cause harm eventually, you know, this is it's going to fight back. I mean, the planet will always bounce back. Even without us, she will find a way. You know, she just takes back. Nature takes everything back. And that's the way it is. We're not the first kick at the can. We're not going to be the last kick at the can here on planet Earth.
Well, it's like, you know, John Muir said, it's like, look, if you treated this Earth as if it were a church, you'd be a lot better off. You'd have more respect. You'd treat it well. You'd treat it in a more sacred way.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of back to like when you're just one person. And mm-hmm. let's say you're distressed about the environment. Let's say you have small children. What are they growing up? You know, what can mm-hmm. we do? What can we do? Mm-hmm. Well, there's things that people can do. And a lot of it has to begin with mm-hmm. your own perspective on the earth you live in. Let's take that. Let's treat it as a church. mm-hmm. Wouldn't that be a great thing if everyone said, oh, let's do that? Now, most people treat churches in a nice way, not everybody. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I like this. Okay. During the pandemic, you might mm-hmm. recall, in the pandemic, everything shut down. The worst air in the world is over Beijing and Shanghai.
Yes.
China.
Yes.
Guess what happened? It cleaned up.
That's right. And dolphins came swimming into Florence.
Yes. And so you can see the Earth can react quickly. I'm not saying we can't be in pandemic mode the whole time.
No.
Tell you what, I look at it this way, Michelle. It's like, what if for a month, for a month, everyone said, if I see a piece of litter on the ground, I'm going to pick it up and throw it away, and I will not add to the litter on the ground. What if everyone on this Earth did that for a month? I mean, can you imagine how powerful that would be? We just, you know, people can do things on their own, and if they have the perspective that we are one, we are connected. If you're connected to something, you're going to treat that with a lot more reverence than if you feel like, oh, that's over there, that's someone else's problem. And that was a big takeaway I got doing this book.
I agree. I think, you know, there's all this talk of exploring into space, and here we have parts of like the oceans that have never been seen. There's so much to explore here. And I believe that, the pollution that we cause and that the waste, you know, that ends up in the water and the oceans. You know, I've had a lot of people come on and talk, you know, about environmental stuff. And sometimes that goes on in censored shows because it gets a little bit tense. But, I think it's so important. And I had Captain Paul Watson come on twice from the Sea Shepherd organization. And he came on and talked about the environmental work he was doing in the oceans. And he made a really good point. He said, if the oceans die, we die.
Oh, no doubt.
And we talk a lot about that. So I think we do need to somehow settle down and maybe just be a little kinder in the environment.
If anyone out there listening to this wonders what the ocean's role is in maintaining the balance, read Jacques Cousteau. It's like the oceans, the ice caps, and land. All of this stuff has a symbiotic relationship. The oceans are there to absorb heat, okay? And that's how we can have kind of a nice environment that plays out. But this, let me just go down this road here quickly. But climate deniers would say, hey, it's just weather. Just weather. What's the problem? And you know what? If you look back in time, you'll say, well, we had an ice age. Then we had other things. But my conclusion on that, and Charles Keeling did a lot of work on this when he discovered that the level of greenhouse gas in the atmosphere, you can't have zero greenhouse gases in the atmosphere. You need some, but not too much. It's kind of a balance. Right now, when the greenhouse gases go real high, we trap heat. And when we trap heat, the oceans actually can't absorb all that heat or the ice caps to maintain the balance. So what's happened, if you look over time, it's just weather. This is a 100,000-year cycle.
Yes.
But what's happened for us is we've accelerated the cycle in the industrial age. Mm-hmm. In the last 100 years, 150 max, we have skewed the balance so hard over that the Earth cannot compensate in a natural way. So this is my kind of, if I were talking to a climate denier, I wouldn't tell them. I wouldn't say, well, you know, it's just weather. No, I don't reject you completely. No, I don't. But the Earth is a balance, just like our bodies. We try to keep them in balance. And we've skewed it so far that all of a sudden the oceans can't compensate to absorb the energy. We're trapping it all. And guess what do we see now? We see, weather extremes happening more and more. You get a lot of flooding. You get wildfires. I'm here in California. So it's really a matter of balance to me. And if people are respectful and they observe some common things about don't take more than you need, just take what you need, understand what's going on here. And, we are getting technologies coming out that will help us, get away from the fossil fuel thing, which is fundamental to the increase of greenhouse gases, which leads to the out of balance.
Sure. It's a cycle.
Man has pushed. It's like everything was kind of going okay, and then the industrial age came up and went, and the Earth is just like, wow, how am I supposed to recover from that very quickly?
There's a lot to factor in. And it's fine because we don't all know the future. So it's interesting when you have these, these souls who are like, look, we do know. And we do want to try to get our messages out. We need to get the messages out on so many different levels, you know. But, you know, but I think when you have people like Wayne Dyer, and I think when you have like St. Francis, what did he have to say?
Well, you know, first of all, on, you know, I may have had some perceptions that, like, on the other side, they know exactly what's going to happen in the future and they can map on it. I don't think that anymore.
Yeah.
There's this thing called free will.
Yes.
That we have. And free will allows us to lead our life in a certain way. And free will allows me to go, oh my God, those life lessons, I better learn them quickly. But, you know, the Wayne Dyers and the St. Francis's of the world gave a different perspective on how to deal with the environment. St. Francis was like, look, we are one. I'll repeat that again. To me, it's the most important message of the book. We are one.
Yes.
You know, us here on Earth, the animals, the plants, Mother Earth, the oceans, we're all connected. And if we operate as if we are not all connected, then bad things will happen. And so that, and Wayne Dyer had many of the same. Wayne Dyer, here's what he said. It says, what is the spiritual lesson with climate change? Wayne says it's a collective guilt for the abuse of Mother Earth. The lesson is to come together as a race, to learn from mistakes, and not view life as win the competition. This is back to the whole zero-sum thing. I am firmly convinced this is not a zero-sum game. There's plenty for everybody here. Starts with love, starts with respect. You go from there, and you will naturally operate maybe in a different way. It's like, it's so distressing, you know, when you see people just like dump their stuff on the side of the road. They're not considering the earth as one. They're like, I am one, and I don't want my junk, so I think I'll dump it over here, which creates problems for other people. And you see where I'm going.
Oh, I do. Nothing that a high fine won't take care of. They've got them in Canada. They get real crazy with it, you know. But I think, you know, we have to work as a collective. And I think that is the message, you know, put aside any sort of division, if division is a thing, and with some topics it is, others not so much. You know, there needs to be unity. You have one home, one home. And at the end of the day, even if they manage to make it to Mars, not everybody's going to be able to go. There's only so many trips out, you know what I mean? Like, this is home.
Well, it's like when I was a kid, what was the, you know, here I am kind of like in corporate Silicon Valley. The golden rule is he who has the gold rules. You know, I go through that every day. But when I was a kid growing up, what was the golden rule? Treat others the way you would like to be treated.
Yes. Yes, exactly.
It's pretty simple when you get right down to it. I don't know. We struggle as a race.
We do. We do. It's interesting because we find ourselves to be like we're so advanced. But technically speaking, when you start looking into the ancients, they were more advanced.
There is some amazing stuff. History does repeat itself.
It does.
In many ways, technology too, you know.
Yes, so. Yes. 100%, 100%. You think, though, is hopefully as technology comes forward that we understand it now, and we pay attention, and we don't think that, you know, don't get careless with it. We're in the age of artificial intelligence coming up. Let's not get too spicy with that because it might just bite back.
Well,
I know.
The whole AI thing, which I'm kind of in the middle of down here, but
but you know, you have to have a healthy respect for it.
Yeah.
You know, is what I'm trying to say. In any technology, you have to have a healthy respect for it because it can run away with you know, like nuclear stuff. I mean, you know, like there's a lot. We can destroy ourselves with it if we're not careful and respectful of the components we're working with.
Well, here's some good news on that. First of all, what came through in this entire effort of creating this book is that the younger generations – I am not the younger generation. Most guys like me are retired right now. I don't know why I could start up, but here I am, you know.
So here we are.
But the younger generation gets it. And many of the technology innovations around clean energy and doing things that can improve our planet, the younger generation is working on many of those. We don't hear a lot about them all the time. But, you know, being able to use seaweed and kelp to replace plastics. I mean, my God, yeah. I cannot stand to buy anything plastic. I can't avoid it sometimes.
Yes.
It's so pervasive.
Yes.
But on the nuclear thing, nuclear fission, which is what nuclear reactors are today, which creates radioactive waste and all the bad things. Mm-hmm. But nuclear fusion is 100% clean, no radioactive waste. It's being worked on. Albert Einstein, Tesla, you know, you read through it and they'll tell us 25 years from now, that will obviate the need for fossil fuels to create energy. So things like that are going. I mean, and it's being worked on. Now, I will say what bothers me a little bit is like a lot of the research funding that goes into stuff like this in our current environment. As I sit here today talking to you, many of these things are being pulled or scaled back, but I have confidence that sane minds will prevail and that will come around because the technology is in development. It is there that can help us. The younger generations get it. You know, I mean, I'm still wondering what happens when I come back in a lifetime, and I'm wondering what happens to family members with small children. And, you know, we're going to have to make it work somehow, some way.
So, I think so. I mean, you know, you look at different, you know, we speak about the Earth. She does have a way of giving up her secrets. And there are ancient sites that are turning up, like old mines and, you know, uranium mines, things that are like war. It defeats, you know, look at millions of years old. It's kind of like, what the heck? We're not taught that in school. But these sites exist and they're just not talked about. But of course, in the age of internet technology, it's coming out into the world and we all get little snippets of like, wow. So there were, you know, technology was very prevalent at one point. And when you think about how it ended up, you know, all of the stuff is buried. And was this a planetary cataclysm? You know, was this, you know, we all get hit by the asteroid that got the dinosaurs, got everything else. Was there more intelligent life at the time that all this was taking place? Like, it leaves you with so many questions, which maybe you have to consider in another book, talk to some other spirits and say, hey, what was all of this stuff? Wow. What happened to us and how can we avoid it?
Yeah, I guess it's like the further I go along here, the less and less I know that I know. It's just kind of like that. So.
Oh, to me, I read the book and I'm like, oh, see, now I have so many other questions because it's endless because I truly believe that these beings want to share the information.
Well, what was kind of reassuring to me is the fact that, okay, here's us in this Earth all trying to get along and figure it out. Then you have all the souls on the other side, multiple lifetimes going back and forth. These souls, while there is free will and they don't mandate what's going to happen here, they want to help. They want to be our guides. They are accessible. They are as close as we can somehow imagine them to be. Whether it's family members or whether it's people like Nikola Tesla that is trying to inspire other scientists, whether it's John McCain working with a group on the other side to try to do things to preserve democracy, which is in great peril right now. These souls are there to do a lot of things. I mean, John Muir is with some sort of group on the other side. I don't know exactly how it works, but it's people that really, you know, admire the beauty and appreciate it the way he did. For example, when Muir transitioned, he said, when I kind of like, you know, the fog lifted, I was sitting in a meadow as if I was at Yosemite, which was his dream of like the best place to be. He was just drawn to that. And so these souls on the other side are there to help us. They want us to, you know, make the progress. I'm sure, you know, I would love to have a round table with some of them. Go, what do you think about the way things are going right now? It's like, you know, what do we have to get, you know, smacked with to get the point? I guess that's part of what's going on right now is we got to get the point. But, you know, it made me feel that there wasn't really a separation per se, but in the human way that we live, you have to have a lot of faith and you have to use your energy in a connective way. And if you can do that, you're going to be better off. I'm convinced. That's why people, you know, I don't know, Michelle, it's like how many books have been written about meditation versus how many people really take the time to do it. It's not complicated, but it takes it takes a discipline, and it makes us say we have to stop now. We have to now listen. Mm-hmm. We have to open up our mind and ears and simply be open to listening. Mm-hmm. And that's probably a commentary on our society in a sense, you know.
This should be like a bunch of tag words. People seem to go with tag words nowadays.
Hashtags.
Yeah. I think we need to, you know, we need to maybe implement things like that in ways that people see it every day. It's a tragedy, and yet it's, you see there's so many people out there just trying to make that difference, you know?
Yeah.
When in channeling, did you guys find, and I guess it's a question for Sam, which I'm sure you would know, there's a big theory that in the spirit world there is no language barrier. Did you guys come across any of that aside from accents or things like that? Was there ever a point where Sam's like, I don't know what this person's actually saying?
Yeah, that's a really interesting point. There were, first of all, it was conversational English language, which is our language, but there would be certain things like one kind of funny story. I think we were talking about Theodore Roosevelt, and we were talking about what can we do here, and he was like, you have to get a hold of your lawmakers, you have to write the letters, you have to get people with the money. Mm-hmm. and he made a comment. He said, and if someone was willing to do an idea like that, I'd be on that like a rat on cheese. This is a comment from Theodore Roosevelt.
And then
it kind of led to another kind of semi-joke among the souls we were talking to, this notion of 100%. I forget who we were talking to, but they like to answer the question, 100%. And then we brought it up to St. Francis, and he was like, 100%? What does that mean? What's going on? And so there was not a language per se barrier.
Yeah.
Some of the colloquial terms or something like that.
Colorful language. Yeah. Yes.
So we did see that at times. That was pretty interesting, I thought.
That's funny. St. Francis is like,
what does 100% mean? And then after we told him, he started using it.
All right.
In the conversation. Yeah. These souls actually, and the audiobook, I'm really excited for the audiobook that's out there.
So is it on Audible? Because
it is. Yeah.
Okay, good. Yeah, because Kathy was asking about that. Okay, good.
When you hear that, I mean, Carolyn wrote the book, and we recorded all the interviews. Even on our website, you can hear a lot of snippets. Mm-hmm. But then when the audiobook came through, and our audio guy took the soul's recording, because we did these on Zoom, we recorded the conversation, so you can hear the accents and stuff, and it just was powerful to hear this in the spoken word. Especially interesting, I mean, the accents and stuff like that that come through, but just, I don't, for me, it was a much different experience. So I was really glad that we made the audiobook and it's out there. I don't know how many audiobooks out there are recorded sessions with voice channeling sessions with souls. I think it's very unique, but to me, it's also personally very powerful. And if anyone's interested in that, you can just go to our website, listen to a few of them. And we actually have a podcast that just started a couple weeks ago.
Oh, excellent.
You search Channel Messages of Hope on YouTube, you'll find it. And our goal is to get this book, these messages, in the hands of people that can maybe find some comfort with it. That's it. That's my business plan.
I think it's a great one personally. I did put the website up in the stream, so we're on 8 different streams simultaneously. The only place it won't show up is Roku TV, so they don't do the stream.
Greatly appreciate that and letting you me come on your show and everything. So
it's a pleasure. It's a pleasure. I've been looking forward to it, and I'm glad that we had the time to finally do it. And you know, I had to start another show just to clear up some waiting time. We have 3 now, just trying to go because it's too long. And then I get just as antsy, you know, because I get all excited about a topic like tonight. So this has been great. So, I mean, are you guys looking at doing like another.
Carolyn's the inspiration for this book. This was kind of her thing with Baba and the council, and I helped out. But the next book, she's toying with the topics, but you know, maybe something like the power of forgiveness, or how certain inspirational souls use life challenges to get to mm-hmm. something. It's a messages of hope thing. Mm-hmm. And I think she'll be working on that, later this year, probably something coming out next year. But it's going to be a long channel messages of hope. You know, we focus on the environment because mm-hmm. Bob and the council said the earth is having trouble right now. This is where you need to focus. So she kind of goes where the spirit moves her. But I think those mm-hmm. things I mentioned will probably be mm-hmm. along the lines. So, yeah, it's in planning.
Yes, that'll be great. What do you say to the naysayers who are kind of like, oh, you can't do that? Because, you know, if you don't experience it, it's hard for some people to even grasp that the other side would be so communicative.
Well, let me say this. Wayne Dyer told us, I don't think this is in the book, but he said, if you write a book for everyone, you write a book for no one.
Ah. Okay. Sounds like something Dyer would say.
Yeah. Yeah. And in fact, he gave us some very specific things in terms of publishers and people. We would have never known. I mean, but mm-hmm. we're not here to convince people on the authenticity of the channeling or mm-hmm. is it real? Our target market is spiritually aware, mm-hmm. spiritually curious. You know, you're worried about the environment or what you can do. We are not here to convince anyone. If a person steps forward and says, "Yeah, I don't buy into all this channeling," say, "Oh, you're not our demographic." Mm-hmm. Simply not. We're not here to convince anyone. Mm-hmm. But the people that are more, aware and curious and have that concept that the separation is really not—it's only as great as our mind will. Mm-hmm. make it. Mm-hmm. Those are the people that are already, you know, understanding that the messages are coming from somewhere. So, you know, the naysayers, I mean, there's naysayers about, you know, the channeling and your ability to communicate with the afterlife, all this kind of thing. So I'm not here to convince mm-hmm. you guys. Then mm-hmm. there's naysayers about the environment. Oh, it's just the weather and everything. But for them, I have a very technical explanation. Mm-hmm. It's an out of balance situation that we exacerbated by this 150-year massive blip to take. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I could go down that road. Technology is kind of what I do. I'm not saying I'm an expert at it, but I've come to an understanding. Mm-hmm. So that's, I guess that would be my long answer to a short question.
Right. I think spirituality is something that people are leaning more towards now as well. We seem to see this, we're seeing this resurgence, you know, that there was a big spiritual movement going back in the, you know, 100 years ago, and it seems to be coming back. And you were able to talk to Gandhi. So what did Gandhi, what was his contribution to this?
Well, Gandhi, you know, he was kind of an activist, but a peaceful activist.
Yeah.
So, you know, and he actually, you know, he brought a lot of awareness. He was actually murdered because of his activism. Mm. But, you know, his message is if mankind would slow down, if they would try to do more listening, lead a more quiet life. I mean, you got to have a lot of things going mm-hmm. on. Mm-hmm. That is kind of where he was coming from. And, mm-hmm. You know, and he gave his life, you know, for this, you know, in India and stuff mm-hmm. like that. So Gandhi is like the peaceful activist that is just telling us that mm-hmm. if you believe and you stick to, you know, your beliefs and you're open and you're listening mm-hmm. and you have courage, mm-hmm. you know, he had a lot of courage, this mm-hmm. guy. You know, you could say peaceful activist. No, the guy was one of the bravest souls I read about in this whole thing. Mm-hmm. mm-hmm. So I'm just looking here to see if there's anything else I can talk to you about. But, you know, on the other side, a lot of these souls, they do work together. So Gandhi, mm-hmm. we would ask them, you know, not all souls have interacted with the other souls, but Gandhi, St. Francis, you mm-hmm. know, Wayne Dyer, mm-hmm. that spiritual leadership group is a very strong group. And if people can tap into that energy, mm-hmm. that they can try to establish connection to that.
Mm-hmm.
Ask Gandhi, ask Wayne Dyer, and ask St. Francis to be your guides.
Mm-hmm.
I would say anyone out there listening to this, just do it. They'll do it. They want mm-hmm. to do it, and their influence will come through in ways you may not really imagine. Things mm-hmm. will just come to you.
Yes, yes. A couple of questions of Kathy. Have you talked to the Buddha?
No, the Buddha was not part of this. Part of this.
Maybe the next round.
Yeah, maybe the next one. Yeah.
Desmond Tutu, yeah.
No. Here's the way it went for the souls that you see in the table of contents. Carolyn came up with an initial list, short list. Mm-hmm. And when we start talking to a soul, we would ask that soul, who else should we be talking to? Mm-hmm. Like, Nikola Tesla said, hey, Samuel Clemens.
So it's a referral system.
Theodore Roosevelt said, talk to John Muir, things we didn't really understand. So when you look at the table of contents, what I noticed is what came across is a really nice distribution of technologists, preservationists, mm-hmm. conservationists, spiritual mm-hmm. leaders, and policymakers, and they all have a different perspective. So mm-hmm. I think that is really where, and we did not plan it that way.
Mm-hmm.
It kind of came through that way. So there's so many others. I mean, Carol, she has stacks of books as she's thinking about the next book and who to research, and she does very deep research on the persona that lifetime that she mm-hmm. wants to talk to. So we shall see. We are open to all suggestions.
Yeah, well, I love it. I think it's great, because as somebody who does talk, to spirits and who has had communication, I know it's a real thing, and I know that they're very eager to share information, and I know it's, for some of them, it's very, very hard for them to be able to come through. You really, have to be, I don't want to say an old pro, but you need to have an idea of how much energy to put forward to be able to do it successfully. And even with your channeler, with Sam, she would probably be able to tell the difference, between a seasoned soul and one who may be struggling to come forward.
You know, that's a really interesting point. I am not a professional, none of that, nor is Carolyn.
Yes.
Sam was like the internet for us of channeling. She wouldn't even remember the session afterwards. But one thing we did get is that you could do a channeling interview session, don't go more than an hour, because the souls told us it takes an immense amount of energy to participate in that kind mm-hmm. of thing. And they, I don't know if the word tired is the right, descriptor, but, and even for Sam, Sam couldn't do this for 6 hours at a time. She invokes, she brings the soul in, soul takes over her persona, mm-hmm. and, 45 minutes, an hour we learned. Mm-hmm. Don't go too much further than that, because it does. It takes a lot of energy. So I think I hear what you're saying. I didn't understand this at all.
Before
we started this, but that's what we learned.
It takes a lot of energy for sure, and they can sometimes have to use some of that energy to be able to give them the strength to communicate. Especially, I mean, think of how long it is for Sam to do this for, let's say, an hour.
Yeah.
It's hard. It's hard for a soul also to be able to go that amount of time.
Here's one other thing I'd be interested in your feedback on this. We would talk to souls and say, did you see the other interviews? Some of them would say yes. Some would say no. But John Muir? I forget who said, it's almost like it's like a movie theater. Yeah. And he said, it's a hard ticket to get.
Wow.
To be invited in. I mean, look, it's like we have the council. These are ascended masters that are making all this happen. And it's so Carolyn would be like, little me sitting on earth, the council. I don't get it. But you were chosen, Carolyn, because you have great wisdom in how to do these things. Mm-hmm. But it's a lot to take in if you're just like, I'm just here in a body, trying to get through the day.
Trying to muddle through. Yeah. I'm in soul school. Yeah. It is a tough
trying to make payroll. I got some things going on, but it's like, yeah, that was that a hard ticket to get is a line that really stuck with me from, I'm pretty sure it was John Muir, but
I like that, because that's probably something that, you know, he would have spoke like in his time. So it's like sort of like a little validation, maybe with a little quippy, little quips.
Yeah, you're
like 100%. And Francis is like, what are you on about with this 100%?
Yeah, now if we were talking to John Muir in a body right now, you know, the adolescent snowboarder in Canada, he'd probably have a whole other thing like, bro, you know. I'm sure it's a completely different thing, but they kind of, we were talking to their persona of that lifetime.
Yes.
That was what I came away with. And there and other lifetimes they had before, we don't know. They would give us some insight into what they were doing now. Not all of them were in a body, but you know, a few of them, as we learn to ask more and more questions, sometimes we get shut down. Like, yeah, we can't go there.
I think if it's something where you, it can alter you personally, like your journey is set to happen a certain way, and the decisions that you make are based on your experiences, not necessarily maybe with what they're telling you, right? So I'll ask you this, actually. So in some of these situations, Sam has to filter some of this out, right? Like, don't say that. You know,
because in the way this voice channeling worked with Sam, when the persona, the soul, that lifetime came in, there was no filter. She was actually off, as I mentioned before. She couldn't, remember anything about these sessions. We'd have to tell her what happened. She could listen to the recording. There was no, I detected zero filter. She wasn't in the conversation. She was a conduit for the conversation. So, I don't believe there was any filtering going on with this.
That's interesting. Just, it was just everyday spirits, especially family members who just have to get in there two cents worth. It's kind of like, we can't tell you that. Well, when we can't tell me that, then why are you here telling me that you can't tell me that? tell you that.
Yeah. What? Not in the book, but we work with a variety of channelers. The classic channeling, I give you a question, you contact that soul, you get the information, you give it back to me. There's definitely filtering going on there, but we know enough about our family members when we've had sessions like that and the family member is clamoring to get in. I need to make a point here,
Okay, here's another question. There's this thing called piggybacking that I'm sure Sam could reiterate. In dealing with spirits, sometimes you have other spirits who are like, hey, wait a minute, I have to get a message out and this person has got a clear channel to the outside, and I've got something to say. Did she ever have issues with other spirits trying to kind of hone in on the communication that may not even have been relevant, or that may have been relevant?
In the way we did the channeling with Sam, the voice channeling where she gives up her complete persona to that lifetime, no, zero. But in many other channeling sessions with very reputable, more... what would we call that? Intuitive channeling? Oh yeah, the souls are—they're like competing for airtime.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, we've seen that. We definitely have. But in these interviews, no, because these interviews were kind of set up. We would ask a soul, "How did you know we wanted to talk to you?" Mm-hmm. They would say, "Like, well, we were notified." Well, I'm notified how? Did you get an email or how did that work? It's like, no, it's just there was an energy that said I needed to show up for this. And it was very one-on-one with that soul. We did ask that question because I think we were curious in the way you were. It wasn't, we never set up like the focus group of souls. You know, we never did anything. It was always one-on-one and they'd have the floor. Carolyn would ask the questions or maybe I would. You can hear it on the audio.
Yes.
And it was very focused.
Yes. I love that. I love it. I enjoyed the read. I enjoyed talking to you. And thank you so much for sharing all of this with us. What do you have coming up next? This is the part where you just promote everything you're doing and let's get it out there.
Well, our goal is if anyone needs messages of hope, in this way, and they're spiritually open, spiritually curious. There's a lot there for you. So you can go to our website, www.channelmessagesofhope.com. You can hear some audio clips from these interviews. We do have the podcast. Search for Channel Messages on YouTube. And the next book coming up, as I mentioned, you know, Carolyn, topic not fully figured out now, but something about, you know, we're trying to do inspiration. If you need messages of hope and how to overcome life challenges or how these people did something, you know, it's going to be something along those lines. We did the environment. The council told us to do that. And I agree that was a really good, really good decision. I'll give the council credit for that.
Well, now you've got a foot in the door, so it should be a little bit easier, you know.
You know what? I think in a sense we all have our foot in the door.
Yes.
I think we do. It's just how close can you imagine, can you just connect? Mm-hmm. Connection is, if there's one thing I could say out of all of this, being connected is, that's fundamental.
And being aware.
And being connected will make you aware. And when we're disconnected, which it can happen to me too. I mean, I evaluate my own life and go, God, I've had a rough couple of weeks. My spiritual practice went to, you know, boom.
Yeah.
I'm not connected and I feel it and I don't like it. So I would say that would be.
It's actually interesting that you say that because when you disconnect, you know, to source or any sort of connection, you feel it. It almost like it's just like this knot. For me, really notice a difference.
I do too. It's kind of an isolating feeling. It's like it's not flowing. I'm just running up against it wherever I go. That tells me stop. Go take a walk. Do something. Change your perspective. Get your mind connected to something outside of yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Because it can quickly go, you know, into myself when I'm dealing with whatever I'm dealing with, because everyone listening to this or whatever is dealing with a ton of stuff.
Yes.
We all are. Everybody's got a story going on. But the connection can make it flow better, in my opinion.
Mine as well. I think it makes all the difference. So listen up, people. Stay connected. Stay aware. So important.
Yeah. Stay connected, stay aware. I like that. Yeah.
Evolve.
That too. And you know, figure out your lessons. If you keep doing the same thing over and over, try to learn that lesson so you don't have to come back and do it again.
Exactly. Stay sharp. Good one, Mish. Yeah. That's right. Walk away when it's not going well. That's conditioning. Conditioning, I think, is what keeps us off track big time.
Yeah.
But, John, thank you so much. And when you get that next book out, I hope you'll reach out again so we can bring you back on and talk about it.
You can count on it, Michelle. I've really enjoyed our conversation. You took us into a lot of really great areas, and thank you for the opportunity to discuss it with you.
It is a pleasure, and I look forward to the next time.
Yes, there will be too. We're working it.
All right. Thank you, John.
All right. Have a great day, great evening. Talk to you later.
You too. Bye-bye. Well, everyone, we have come to the end of another fantastic show. Not for everyone, yet for many of us. So with that, it's just staying open-minded because this planet is an incredible place and everything that encompasses is literally out of this world. So you have to try to stay skeptical, but stay a healthy skeptic, open-minded, as I like to say. So thank you, of course, to John Thomas. Big thank you to the United Public Radio Network, UFO Paranormal Radio Network. Of course, our sponsors, Folgers Coffee, thank you. Steve McGinnis, thank you. Justin Snicker, we appreciate you so very much. Tomorrow night, we're going to have some fun because if any of you guys are able to catch the show that was on Sunday night with our dear friends, Steve Genier, Alex Rondini on Nocturnal Frequency, we're spinning right off here tomorrow night. It's going to be a lot of fun because it always is when these guys are on. So we're really going to really have an amazing time. I love these guys. It can go anywhere. It really can. Next Tuesday, I'm just going to plug next Tuesday because it's the new show. And of course, we're day less, right? Because it's on so early. So Tuesday, 2 p.m. Eastern Time on Beyond the Outer Realm, Bill Bungay. Who is he, you ask? Well, he's been on the Outer Realm early days. He happens to be the owner of the Black Monk House, which is said to be the most haunted house in the UK. And he was a blast and a great source of information, lots of inside scoop on this incredible location. Started off skeptical, came out a believer, and has got a whole lot of other things going on to catch us up with. So you do not want to miss this at all. Until then, guys, we'll see you tomorrow night with our special guest from Nocturnal Frequency. Bubbles should be back in the house. Yes, exactly. 30 East Drive. Don't like to just pump that out, but yeah, that's the one. He does it. He's pretty liberal about it. So that is the Black Monk House. And it is a cool wonder. I don't know. Not a bit hyped up. He's going to share some really cool stories with us. And like I said, first time he was on was just like, wow, that is amazing. So you stay the night. Never know. You know what? He's giving me an invite, and I was like, I haven't been to the UK since said invite, because, of course, everything kind of went, you know, crazy all over the world. But definitely something that I would like to take him up on, and you just never know. Maybe I'd be allowed to bring friends. Wouldn't that be cool? I think that'd be outstanding. Anyway, please, guys, if you haven't subscribed, please subscribe, like, follow, share, comment. I do get back to everyone. I appreciate you all so very much, you know, for taking the time to watch. Oh, do a live. maybe, might be a thing. You never know where you're going to find me. That's all I'm going to say. Anyway, guys, good night. We'll see you tomorrow night. Much love.